and welcome to That's Absurd, Please Elaborate. I am Trace Dominguez, one of the hosts of this show.
And I am the other, Julian Huguet.
Wait, there's another Julian Huguet? There's an original Julian Huguet. You're the other
there
one.
There is another. He lives in Chile. We are friends on Facebook, but he's the only one I'm aware of. He added me a long time ago.
There are two of
them? There are, in fact, two Julians Huguet out there in the world. Surprising.
I like that you're like... I like that you're like attorney's general. Yeah. You're the complicated exactly. plural, not the easy plural.
Exactly. Julian's Huguet is the proper way to address us both.
Have you ever been in the same place at the same time? Because if not, that should be the goal of this podcast, is to get you in the same place.
That's a great idea. I'll have to message him. He only speaks Spanish, but I'll try my best. Like, stranger. Hey, you want to come visit real quick? No reason. Yeah, he'll love that. Anyway, let's talk about the show. This is That's Absurd. Please elaborate, if you couldn't tell. This is a show where we take questions that are silly, outlandish, outrageous, or just general weird musings that you might have as you're, say, in the shower or during a business meeting or something. And we take those questions, we dive into them with some research on science or history or whatever background we can try and provide for context, and then we answer those questions for you. It might be a listener submitted question, it might be one from us, doesn't really matter. We just enjoy tackling the weird and absurd.
If this is your first time listening to the show, I would highly recommend, one, continue listening to this episode because it's going to be great. But if you want another episode to listen to, go back in our catalog and look for Is It Pointy? That one I really enjoyed. Or Something About Fields. I really like that one as well, because that one we learn a little bit about where grass comes from, which is cool, but also the electromagnetic field of the earth charging your devices. Both very odd and absurd questions.
Mm.
Anyway, we're happy you're here. Thanks for listening.
I don't know, Trace. Our Halloween episode is one of my absolute favorites. And we have another holiday episode. It's this non-denominational holiday episode today. So we've picked questions that we feel are loosely related to holidays in some way to tackle.
Yeah, exactly. Happy secular Christmas or whatever holiday you celebrate at the end of the year. Well, shall we get to our questions? Happy holidays to you,
Julian. Yes, happy to you as well. Tell me, what's your question this week?
My question this week is from a listener, Sandy in Seattle, and she asks, are nuts actually fruit pits?
Mm.
As a child, I remember my mother quoting a fun fact that cashews weren't really nuts because they weren't actually part of a fruit. But as a grown-up, I learned that almonds are closely related to peaches, and thus the squishy bad almond in the center of their pits. When I thought about it more, I realized walnuts also have a green fleshy thing around them when they're on the tree. So are all nuts, of course excluding their legume imposters, really the pit of a fruit? Just most of those fruits suck, so we don't think about them.
Hmm. This is a very, very semantic question. You're really going to have to dive into what fruit is.
Guess what? That's where we're going. So
right to the pit of it.
This is going
to
be really fun. It's a really good holiday question because I don't know if you've heard of nutcrackers.
Mm.
So I was like, nuts? Oh, you know, chestnuts roasting on open fires and stuff. Are chestnuts nuts? I don't know. What nuts were the nutcrackers cracking? You know what I'm saying? There's so many questions that you can answer from this one question.
Sure. Sure, absolutely.
I'm nuts about nuts. I love it when people ask the really simple ones.
When it comes to like food definitions and things like that, there's always so many like weird technicalities. Like the one that everybody knows is tomatoes technically a fruit, right? But I also think it would be insightful to explain why, because like a lot of people just know that and it ends there. They're like, tomatoes a fruit. And it's like, what makes it a fruit?
It becomes this like, semantics.
Yeah.
And so I think that actually transitions really well into the first point I have here in my answer. Firstly, Sandy, simple answer, nuts aren't entirely fruit pits. And yet, some nuts are. Because it depends on your definition of what a nut is. And just like that, we need to define all sorts of different things. So it reminds me of something a botanist once told me. You're alluding to this just a second ago, Julian. And that is that fruits and vegetables, as definitions, do not matter. They are not real. They are something that we use to help us break down a lot of different plants that we eat and the different parts of them. So like, Julian, you probably know this already. Fruits come from plant flowers, you know, but like the stalks, roots, leaves, those are considered typically vegetables. Mm. But it's not really a hard and fast rule, because honestly, fruits and vegetables are different things depending on where you are and who you're talking to. For example, fruits are taxed at higher rates because they tend to have more sugar in them. And so, like, if you're talking to a tax assessor, they want everything to be a fruit because that gives them more things to tax. Mm. So it's like, botanists, by the way, don't email me. I know that it's more complicated than this, but I'm not saying that the fruit and vegetable labels aren't important. I'm saying that taxonomy is complex and some things fit into more than one box or do not fit into a box very cleanly. And you end up being really confused by it.
Okay.
And I also have written here, classic example, tomatoes.
Right.
Is it a fruit or a vegetable? It is a fruit, but it's actually not. It's technically a berry.
Sorry, what?
Yep. Corn. Is that a fruit or a vegetable?
I feel like because if tomatoes are a berry, this is a trick. So I'm going to say corn is meat.
Corn is both a fruit and a vegetable.
No.
And also a grain. Cucumbers, are they a fruit or a vegetable?
I believe a cucumber is technically a lethal weapon, so it's not like.
Are you a cat?
Yeah, cucumber. Surprise! Anything's a lethal weapon if you throw it hard enough. All right.
That's right. True. Yeah. Cucumbers are a fruit. Acorn, is an acorn a fruit or a vegetable?
Oh, man. Fruit.
That was a trick question.
Though. The
sorry.
One yep. I don't it, guess it, trick question on.
That one is actually a nut, like a real nut. So if you're asking if nuts are fruit pits, no, not all of them, because acorn is a nut and it's not the pit of a fruit. So what is a nut?
Yes.
Let's define
yes.
it. Botanically, a nut is a dry, single-seeded fruit that has a high oil content. So that would mean things like acorns. However, cashews, walnuts, pecans, pine nuts, we consider them nuts, but they're all fruits. They're all actually fruits, all of them. Cashews, walnuts, pecans, pine nuts are fruits. Yeah. Most things we call nuts are actually a combination of a fruit and a seed in one, meaning most nuts are fruits.
Okay. See, for pine nuts in particular, I was thinking, like, that's just got to be a seed, you know? Like a pine nut, here's random biology knowledge that's in my brain for some reason.
I love it.
And that is, okay, so most plants that you see, the flowering plants, are angiosperms, right? Like this category of plant that got really dominant at some point millions of years ago. But before the dominance of angiosperms, there were gymnosperms. And there's a handful of them still around, but like the most common ones are like pine trees or gymnosperms.
Right.
And it has to do with do they have like a flower? How do they pollinate or whatever? The gymnosperms of pine nuts, and I'm going entirely by memory on this, so I may be a little off.
Yeah.
But yeah,
that's fine.
They're like inside the cone of pine trees is like a teeny tiny little, you know, gamete thing that's like the next generation and like the other pollen or whatever gets in there and fertilizes it, and then it drops from the pine cone drops eventually, and then the seeds get scattered and then it plants. So I don't think it's a nut. I thought it was just a seed. Wait, are nuts seeds though? Are they all seeds? Oh crap.
Just ask me the question.
What is a seed?
A seed is a fertilized embryo of a plant.
Okay.
So if you have a seed in a watermelon, for example, it would have to that would be the seed. The watermelon is the fruit. The seed is inside of there. And there are so many different things that we also eat, and some of which we call nuts, like peanuts, which is a seed. Lentils, the beans that are inside of bean pods, coffee beans, cocoa beans, peas, those are all seeds. A legume is an edible seed enclosed in a pod. So peanuts are the seeds, but the peanut as a whole, that's a legume.
But it's not a
and
nut.
If that wasn't confusing enough. But it's not a nut. None of them are nuts.
This segment is driving me legumes. This is...
wait. But it gets more complicated.
No.
Because we also have to define then what a fruit is, right? So if a nut is a fruit and a seed in one, and a seed can be inside of a fruit. What is a fruit? So a fruit is a fleshy or dry ripened ovary of a flowering plant.
Right.
So again, the watermelon is the fruit. The seed is inside of it. Grapes, which typically have seeds in them. Apples, which have seeds in them. However, it's funny because apples, there's like the endocarp and the pericarp and all these different parts of fruits. And I didn't get into that because it's really hard to explain in a podcast without a diagram. But inside of an apple, there's like the harder part right around the seed versus the softer part that we eat. And those are different parts of that fruit. So there's actually, it gets really complicated because apples are one of those like corn where it's like a really interesting organism. Anyway, all of these things are ovaries with seeds in them. Cucumbers, tomatoes, acorns, almonds, bean pods, corn, rice, oats, and other cereal grains are all technically fruits. Rice is a fruit. An acorn, even though it's a nut, is also a fruit. We mostly just eat the seed parts of a lot of those things. We don't eat the fruit part all the time. A cucumber, we're eating the fruit part, but there are seeds inside of the cucumber as well. And so we're sort of kind of zooming down, right? We have fruit that's very broad. Then we have nut and seed, which are somewhat more, you know, specific. But then it still gets confusing because, as you recall, I said that tomatoes are berries.
Yeah.
So what the heck's a berry?
No, I don't know anymore.
Berries and drupes are other ways to talk
You're
about
You're just making
these.
Stuff up now. You're just trying to slide in vocabulary. There's a droop.
A droop is my favorite
there's
one.
There's no such thing as a droop. There's no noun called a droop.
Julia,
I'm going to put my foot
Julian,
down.
I love that you said that.
Okay, what's a droop?
A peach. A peach is a droop. You want to guess why a peach is a droop and a tomato is a berry and a cucumber is a fruit? Why is a peach a droop?
Peach is a droop, a tomato is a berry, and a cucumber is a fruit. Is it because a peach has that really intense pit? Is that it?
Yes! You did it!
I figured something out on my own!
So a fleshy fruit with a hard pit that contains the seed is a drupe. So an olive, a peach, a plum, cherries, those are all drupes. Some sources say that avocados are drupes as well, except that it isn't really a fleshy fruit, right? Like it's like a different, it doesn't have the right skin to taxonomize into the correct place. So sometimes they're like, it's a droop, and sometimes they're like, it's a berry. Almonds and pistachios and pecans, even though I called them fruits, you know, droops are fruits as well. They're all droops, but they're the seed that is inside the fruit. We just don't eat the fruit.
Yeah.
So an almond is actually contained inside of something when it's growing. We just get rid of that and we eat the middle part. Pistachios the same way. Pecan is the same way. They are the seed pit in the center. So Sandy, this is where she is totally spot on. These are fruit pits. However, they're also seeds.
Okay.
Blackberries and raspberries are, and this is another new word, drupelets.
No,
it's a
stop
lot of
it.
Little droops that aggregate together to make a single fruit. Pineapples are also aggregate fruits. There are lots of little chunks that merge together. And so a berry, let me get to the very last definition. A berry is any fruit with seeds in it. So bananas, grapes, tomatoes, those are fruits, but they're also berries. Funnily enough, though, you know what isn't a berry?
A strawberry, because the seeds are on the outside.
A strawberry.
Yeah.
That's right. And a raspberry, because it is a drupelet. Julie, I have a note here for myself that's, Julian, please express yourself.
I have like so much disdain now for like... like if I go in the fruit section of my grocery store, I'm gonna get irrationally angry now. It's just
no, don't
so,
get angry.
Why are things like this? Okay. Also, droops, just, drupelets. Was Dr. Seuss in charge of naming these things? Like, okay.
You know, I don't know. Maybe okay. You know, maybe they called them.
And
maybe
so,
they called them
so
up.
Wait. So what defines a berry?
Okay, a berry is a fruit with seeds
okay,
in it.
Okay, gotta have seeds in it. But a watermelon is not a berry. Or is it?
It's a fruit, but the seeds are embedded within the flesh. So this is where we can get into the very complicated, you know, again, pericarp, mesocarp, all these different pieces of fruits, berries, nuts. But since these are actually a variety of different things, it just gets so complicated. Taxonomy is complex, and some things fit into one box, some things fit into multiple boxes, and some things don't fit into any of the boxes that we have. And so we either have to come up with a new one, like with apples, which are part of a pom group. It's a whole different group of fruits, because it just does things differently. Turns out evolution wasn't a very neat little plan that fits onto a piece of paper. It just is like, well, this works, so let's do it. And so when we come back and try and taxonomize, doesn't really work out.
What I see it more as is us trying to retroactively apply, like, take the things that we just kind of established naturally without a sort of scientific grounding for. Just like people eventually, oh, I need a word for these things. They all seem kind of similar. They're sweeter. They're nice. Okay, they're fruit.
Right.
And then eventually somebody's like, well, what are the fruit criteria? You know, some very bureaucratic-minded individual, or like you said, for tax purposes, whatever, right? There might be some administrative need to be like, we have to lay out what a fruit is, and then all hell breaks loose, you know?
Yeah. I really think, off the top of my head, I think a really good example of this is how many is a few, right? For some people, a few might be two. For some people, a few might be seven. For some people, a few might be five or like three, but no more than four. You know, like it's the definition of these words. We use them differently than they are used technically. Mm. And so what we're talking about is, you nailed it right out of the gate, a lot of semantics. Sure, all of these things are fruits. Many of these things are drupes. Some of them are aggregate fruits. There's also a thing, which we're going to come back to in a second, that is essentially like a pseudo fruit, which I'm going to explain in a minute. But
and then there's the boops and the snoots and the gobbledygoots.
And then some of them with the butter side down, you know, it's just that
we've waged war on them because we eat our toast butter side up. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. You're a butter side up guy, huh?
Oh,
wow. This podcast is over. OK, so Sandy specifically asked, are nuts actually fruit pits? And I want to reiterate, not entirely, but some of them are. The thing is, she also mentioned, and this is something that I am close to and find very interesting, cashews. Everyone more or less has seen or eaten a cashew. Cashews are a fascinating nut. Culinarily speaking, we refer to them as a nut. When we eat it, we call it a nut. But it's actually a fruit pit. And it's part of a fruit called the cashew fruit. It comes from Brazil. They grow on trees. They look totally, totally bizarre. Julian, I'm going to click on that. Maybe it'll bring up cashew fruit.
Oh, wait. Is the cashew in just the little dangly bit at the very end?
The cashew's just in the little dangly bit at the very end. Yeah. Oh. So that's a cashew fruit. It grows on the cashew tree. It's native to South America. And it's really interesting. Julian, can you describe what this looks like?
It almost reminds me of like a chili pepper kind of, or like a chili pepper and a pumpkin had a baby. Is how I'd put it.
Yeah.
Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah. So that's called the cashew apple. And on the end of the cashew apple, can you describe what that is?
It's what it looks like a little curly stem, except, you know, instead of connecting it to the tree or bush or whatever it's growing off of, it's just kind of hanging out, and it's roughly cashew shaped.
Yeah. So that is the cashew. It's inside of that little dangly bit, which, again, you can see this picture by, you know, just going to the internet and asking it to show you one. Or you can go to our Instagram, which is at That's Absurd Show.
Wait, is cashew apple, is that what Cash App is short for?
Wow, this episode not sponsored by Cash App, but you can send us money on Cash App if you want. So in Brazil, they take the cashew apple and they use it to make cashew juice, but it's a very delicate part of the fruit, so it's difficult to transport, so we don't really see it often in places far away from cashews where they're actually grown. But the cashew is inside of the tip of that thing, which kind of looks like the cartoon version of a stem, but you're totally right. It hangs off the complete opposite end from where the branches are, and it's a hard thing inside of the fleshy thing, which means it's a drupe. It's got a hard pit inside of a fleshy fruit. We do not eat that fleshy part because it is poison. So we do not eat it. And in fact, cashews themselves contain an irritant, which is a skin irritant toxin similar to poison ivy. So we do not eat them unless we have roasted them first. We would never eat a raw cashew because it would be toxic. So Sandy was right in this specific case. They are called nuts in the culinary world, but botanically they are drupes. It's the pit of a fruit, and then we roast it and we eat it.
You know, I have I always think about the first person to blank, right? And to me, I'm really curious about whatever human being thousands to millions of years ago that was like dealing with the cashew apple and was like, there's got to be some way to eat some part of this, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, tried to eat the apple? No, poison, you know? Felt terrible, threw up. Okay, can't do that. All right, tried to eat the little seed part. Oh, skin irritant. Oh, hate it. What if I roast it, delicious, put it in a can, sell it, profit?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, that the like optimistic, woo, cool part of that is like, look at this really inventive person. But I think in reality, it's probably a lot of people ate them and died.
Yeah.
And then one person realized they were really hungry and they're like, if I roast this, will I die? And so they just kept trying things. And they're like, well, Jack ate this one and he got really sick. And then Aaron Aronson ate it and he died. And then I ate it, but I roasted it first and it was fine. And so it turns out maybe we should just roast it.
Mm.
Yeah. And so the apple is actually called a pseudo fruit or, you know, basically like a, it's like a fruit that doesn't matter because it doesn't actually connect back to the seed. It's a pseudo fruit because there's nothing in it. It's just flesh, which is really interesting. There are several of those in nature, which I find fascinating.
Did your research lead you to coffee beans at all?
I mean, only in the mention that I had of them before. Why? Please bring up your knowledge. Share.
So in high school, I worked at Starbucks and I had to go through training and they gave us like a, you know, a video to watch about the entire coffee growing process. And much to my amazement, coffee beans are not beans at all. They are the seeds of cherries, of a specific kind of coffee cherry that is harvested and we just take the flesh off of it and throw it away because there's not a ton of it and it's not very nutritious. And then we take the seeds of the cherries and we roast them and then we call them beans to be confusing.
Yeah, because they kind of look beanish.
Because they look beanish.
Bean-shaped.
Yeah.
But that's, again, we're just using words that aren't botanically accurate. Or even accurate related to themselves, like how they are related to each other or how these like these little droops are related to the other droops of the world. So like the cashew is a droop. Cherries are droops because they have a hard pit. Turns out, and this is something that if you ever hang out with me, Julian probably knows this. We are at a bar, got a couple, you know, beers in. Something like this comes up and we end up talking about droops for like 3 or 4 hours. And this has literally happened. So when I found this question, I was like, I'm going to get to talk about droops.
Oh, boy. Can't wait to droop some knowledge.
I'm going to droop around. It's going to be great. But anyway, I sort of alluded to this a second ago. Since everything is sort of messed up and mixed up anyway, I want to go back to Sandy's original question, which is where she said almonds are closely related to peaches, which is true. And for a lot of people is super mind blowing. Peaches and almonds are literally genetically related.
Mm.
They grow on trees. They both have fleshy fruits. The difference is we eat the seed of the almond and the flesh of the peach, meaning that both, again, are droops.
They're both droops.
Yeah. And we don't eat the fleshy part of the almond because it contains cyanide, which is why almonds are so bitter. That is what makes them bitter, is a very small amount of cyanide.
Mm.
But like a cashew, once you roast it, it no longer will harm you. So that's why we eat roasted almonds and not raw almonds.
Mm.
Next in Sandy's question, she says, walnuts, they have a green fleshy thing around them and when they're on the tree. And that is true. At my grandma's house, we had a walnut tree and they're like small little apples. We used to throw them and try and break them open. And on the inside, it was a black walnut tree, so they were black. Anyway, walnut. Ready, Julian? Fleshy thing with a hard seed pit in the middle. What is a walnut?
I'm going to go with droop there, Trace.
Droop.
I'm going to go with droop.
They're a droop. So, are all nuts, of course, excluding our legume impostors, really the pit of a fruit? Just most of those fruits suck so we don't think about them? Kinda.
Yeah.
So I made a list. Peanuts, legume. It's a pod of seeds. Almonds, fruit or droop. It's a seed inside of toxic flesh. Pecans or pecans, fruit or droop, but we don't eat the flesh. Walnuts, a fruit or a droop where we don't eat the flesh. Cashews are a fruit or a droop that we don't eat the flesh. Coconuts, which we haven't mentioned before, is a fibrous one-seeded droop. Chestnuts, true nut. That's a nut.
Wow. So there is a distinct nut category. I was starting to think that there were no nuts anymore.
That's right. That's right. Nope. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Holiday episode. Nuts. Botanically, again, nut, dry, single-seeded fruit with a high oil content. Hazelnuts. Right. True nut. Acorn. Nut up. Pistachios. Fruit droop. We don't eat the flesh. Brazil nuts. Julian, you got a guess?
I don't even know what a Brazil nut looks like. I've never had one.
I've never eaten one, but not a true nut.
Damn
but
it.
But it's not a true nut because of a technicality. A nut is a single-seeded fruit, and Brazil nuts grow in groups. So it doesn't fit into that nut box, and instead, it's not a legume because it doesn't grow in a pod. And it's not a droop. It's not a droop because there's no flesh. It's just a seed. It's a regular old seed. Brazil seed. We just call it a nut.
Oh, man. This is honestly making my head hurt. Like,
I know. It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
So you're not wrong, Sandy. Many things we call nuts when we are eating them are actually botanically fruit pits, but they're really droops, but not that that really matters because we've figured out that we eat them and nuts are nuts and whatever. You know, you don't need to go out and be like mad at the grocery store that everything you eat more or less is a droop.
Wow, that was a very complicated answer. That was,
isn't that awesome?
That's, she's not going to be able to take that back and be like, actually, it's going to be a whole lot. Like, the whole explanation that you just gave me is like the minimum that you need to understand.
But can I just one more? I have one more little thing here.
There's more?
No, it's adjacent, not adjacent.
Oh, okay. yeah, go on.
What's up with nutcrackers? Because true nuts are the hard, dry, single-seeded fruit with a high oil content. And ancient people would smash them with rocks and get that high-protein nut meat.
Which right.
is confusing in itself and sounds wrong, but that's what they call it, nut meat. And so by the 13th century, we realized you could make a lever and that would save your fingies from getting smashed by the Rockies. So mm-hmm. it wasn't until the 18th century they started making nutcrackers look like little soldiers. But they were using them to crack nuts so we could eat them. Like, walnuts have that green flesh on the outside, but if you dry them out, it has, like, a hard casing, so you have to crack that open in order to get to the nut. And a lot of nuts, like acorns, you can smash them and eat the middle. You know, I wouldn't, but you could. Brazil nuts are quite hard, even though they're, again, Brazil seeds.
Nutcrackers
are actually European, but I was like, wait a minute. They're called nutcrackers. Do they actually crack any nuts? And why is it they're associated with the holidays? And this is our holiday episode, so I thought, I'm going to learn this.
Here's the in. Here's the in for the holiday. Here's how we justify it all.
So in the 1700s, nutcrackers looked like the ones we use today. They were common in Germany near the Czech border, and they were called Nussknackers. And they took the shapes of soldiers that were baring their teeth and looking fierce to be symbols of good luck, frightening away malevolent spirits. Isn't that great?
When you say the ones we use today, you don't actually use those, right? Because I remember we would put them out for the holidays, and I was one time, I was like, oh, I'm going to use it to crack a nut. And the shellacking I got, no pun intended, I remember it, because it's like, no, it's just decorative. Like, if you want to use a nutcracker, here's just a very simple, like, metal... Yeah. Like yeah. device instead.
Yeah, it was actually because in the 19th century they became popular decor, and so they stopped making them actually crack nuts. But there, I think there must have been a point, like some crossover point, where it was like a fun, interesting way to crack a nut. Like there are several, if you go and look them up, like some really old, you know, 17th, 18th century nutcrackers that they did start to shape like people or like, you know, I mean, they carved table legs into people. You know, when you've got enough of a thing and you want to sell them and make them look fancy, you start carving them into shapes. But it all changed for the nutcracker or Nussknacker. When in 1892, a ballet was released called The Nutcracker. So the Nutcracker Ballet associated nutcrackers with Christmas, which is why we use them for Christmas decor. Before that, they were just used for like, oh, we got to get a nutcracker, put it in the house on the shelf or whatever to ward away evil spirits. It's just with that. But now it's like specifically related to Christmas because the ballet is set on Christmas Eve.
Funny how one piece of media apparently like changed that. And then it's after that, if you had a nutcracker out in like June, people would think you were uncultured. They'd be like, it's tacky. You can't have the nutcracker up.
Put it away.
I don't care if you want to have a walnut right now. That has to wait till at least November 1st, which is when the holidays officially begin.
Aaron Aronson, put your nutcracker away. Put it under the mud. Hide it.
But I saved up 3 sticks and traded it for the nutcracker.
Julian, did you notice that I said nutcrackers are really used for cracking walnuts?
I did notice that.
Isn't walnut a nut, Julian?
No. No, it's not.
Do you want to know what droop cracker would be in German, Julian?
Tell me.
Steinfruchtnacker.
Mmm. Not as catchy as nutcracker in German.
Nussnacker?
Yeah, das Nussnacker. Yeah.
Yeah. Steinfruchtnacker. It's a good band name. Anyway, thanks for your question, Sandy from Seattle. You can send any of your own questions, any other listener out there. During the break, just go to thatsabsurdshow.com/ask or look for the podcast show notes down in your app. There'll be a little link and you can send us an absurd question that we can dig into. But for now, let's take a quick break and come back with Julian's question.
Welcome back to That's Absurd. Please elaborate. We had Trace's question where he covered pretty much everything from soup to nuts. And now, it's time for my question. This came to us from Brendan. And before we tee it up, I just want to say, Trace, we had a team meeting the other day. You, myself, our editor and producer, Kyle, and we discussed, you know, what we like about the show, what questions we pick, that sort of thing. And first of all, we are hugely flattered that people send in questions, you know, and it's not just like my mom like texting me like this would be funny to talk about. Like it's actual people going to the you know, the show website or the form that we've got, submitting something, and it's great. But we were talking about like, man, we're really sliding towards like very, very sciencey questions. And you know, we kind of noticed like a dearth of absurd ones. And then within an hour,
Brendan showed up for us, buddy.
Brendan answered the call.
It's so good.
And said this.
Hello, Trace and Julian, or Julian and Trace. My name is Brendan Fenton, and I live in Manchester, Tennessee. Being the ADHD ecological fiend that I am, I was mining for dopamine on the National Park Service's Facebook page one day. In all of the absurdity that is that page, a fantastic question was posted and unanswered. Is riding a moose more like petting a buffalo or tickling a grizzly bear? The National Park Service says that it's more like checking your insurance policy en route to the hospital. I know that we can't pet grizzly bears, even though they're friend-shaped. Tickling is a different game altogether. I need better answers. Please elaborate, my friends.
And I was like, that's it. That's the one.
Thank you, Brendan.
Easy. Easy. This, first of all, you know, you can be absurd, but then it doesn't make sense, right? Like, you're skiing down a mountain in the middle of the ocean, right? Like, the grammar makes sense, but like, semantically, like, it doesn't. But this is still a logical question that can be answered. But man, is it out of left field. But my favorite thing is the opener where he says, need a definitive answer. It's like life or death.
Oh, I need this
right
now.
I am being dangled by my ankles above a pit of lava. And I don't answer this question correctly, my captors cut the rope or something. Like, need a definitive answer. So, Brendan, in an effort to save you from the lava pit, I looked into this. And the thing is, though, because it's so absurd, what perspective do you want to take from it, right? Do you want to go a historical perspective or a legal one or a biological one or a psychological one?
Wow.
Because there are ways to interpret it in all these ways. Before we dive in, though, Trace, do you think he meant buffalo? Like, when you think of buffalo, what animal do you picture? Like, first thing that comes to mind, describe it. What are the major features?
the big horns, the big fluffy old man head that's like, you know, that's what they would sound like if they were a Simpsons character. They'd be like, I don't want to be here, you know, that kind of, and they got a big old fluffy front. Is that bison? Am I describing bison?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You got,
and they got
what
like
I'm
a really small
at.
Back end and a really yes. big front end with a big old head.
Yeah.
You know
the proportions
what?
Are all off, right? Yeah, they're very yeah, like front yeah. heavy in, yeah. in construction.
Is that a bison?
That is, in fact, a bison, which is not the same as a buffalo. They are related. They're fairly closely related, and we'll get into that. A lot of Americans have this conflation between a bison, which is the shaggy, big humped thing that was in the American, you know, just roaming around through our grasslands until yeah. we basically hunted them to near extinction.
Right.
And buffalo, which are, you know, more like the big horns.
I Googled.
But
I just Googled
heads.
It. Yeah. Yeah. I just Googled it.
Yeah. There's a difference. And there's
a huge difference. They look completely different.
Mm-hmm. There are a couple types of buffalo. You've got Cape buffalo, which are in like sub-Saharan Africa. And then there are water buffalo in East Asia. But yeah, they are not the same as bison.
Huh.
So I'm going to try and answer both, assuming he might have meant bison. And,
right.
you know, sometimes this drives me nuts because, like, I'm a hockey fan, and the Buffalo Sabres hockey team has a bison on the team crest. It's got a bison and a pair
right.
of crossed sabers. So they're really the bison sabers.
The bison sabers.
They
wow,
have
this
two
is
things.
A this is a semantics episode.
There you
I
go.
Think what
yeah.
we're learning here. This is a semantics episode. A
lot of semantic antics here. yeah, so they have two things on their logo, and they got 50% of them wrong, which I think is funny. Or that song Home on the Range, right? Like, where the buffalo roam.
Yeah.
Nope, not
it's
unless
really
he's
bison.
Talking about Africa or East Asia. He's
huh.
not going to have a home on the American range.
Huh.
Anyway.
Wow,
so,
you just blew my mind in so many... I mean, all I knew about buffalo in my head was that they were that big front-heavy fluffy guy. And
mm-hmm.
that, but I have no way of knowing why. And also that it's the word that means a lot of things, so you can use it in a sentence. Buffalo, 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 buffalo. But that's something you can Google, listener, separately.
Okay.
But anyway.
So,
yeah, wow.
So yeah, so just thought I'd make that distinction before we dive in. Okay, so let's talk about, I wanted to look into the historical aspect of this, right? So,
okay.
Riding moose. Is there any historical precedent?
Oh my God. Moose are so big. How would you even... You'd need stairs
yes.
to get on top of them.
They're quite tall, right?
Yeah.
And scary,
yeah,
for that matter. As a
yeah.
Michigander, right, you have some
yes.
experience with this.
I have friends who have hit moose with their car, and the car did not make it. Like,
yeah.
the moose was just like, oh, what? And then it walked away, and the car was, like, destroyed.
Yeah.
It was probably a Toyota, but still...
They're super tall, super heavy, and
yeah.
yeah, and they can be, if it's, you know, like the right time of year and it's like the males are like garden territory and stuff, they can be quite aggressive and scary too.
They're amazing.
So I looked into, there's like all these joke examples of like moose cavalry throughout
mm-hmm.
history, right?
Oh yeah, the RCMP is in Canada. Like, come on. Oh yeah, Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They're up on the moose every day.
Right, yeah, and their partner is a beaver, right?
Like, right, yeah, totally. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Slap
no.
me five there, Beavy.
No, there's no, like, these things are kind, there's some articles, but they're always, like, published on April Fool's Day about, like, oh, the historic Russian moose cavalry or whatever.
So, wait, no one rides moose?
There are, like, one or two weird examples of a guy who, like, found a baby moose and then, like, you know, trained it to be rideable, but it's not a widespread thing. And same for, I got a little distracted because like the question's so weird. I was like, oh, and then are there any cases of people riding bears or buffalo? Which no, but also I had to remind myself that wasn't the question. It's petting buffalo or tickling grizzly bears. Oh, another thing I did find, there's a photo that goes around the internet all the time of none other than Theodore Roosevelt
oh,
riding
yeah.
a moose.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen it, and it gets shared a lot as like, wow, wasn't Teddy Roosevelt such a wild guy, like so badass, right? And yeah. It, like the Teddy Roosevelt mythos is such that it's people believe it. But I looked into this, and it turns out this photo, which I shared with you,
I'm seeing it now, Instagram. And it's a moose swimming through a lake in what appears to be quite a rural area. You know, there's like pine trees and stuff behind in a natural environment, and the moose is swimming. It's got its head above the water and sitting on its back, not really grabbing anything, but his hands are in the fur of the back of the moose, is who appears to be Teddy Roosevelt in like an old school outdoorsy hat.
Yeah.
Kind of sitting there on its back.
Our 11th president. I don't remember which number he was, but
that's
anyway.
Fine. I think 14th, but that's fine.
No, because Lincoln was 16th, and Roosevelt's after Lincoln. Teddy's got to be closer to 20.
I'm Googling it. 26th.
Bam. Okay.
Yeah, good job.
So this picture, though, is actually a fake, but it's not a recent fake. It's from 1912.
Whoa, because I was like, this is clearly Photoshopped. The lighting on Teddy doesn't match the lighting on the moose. They're coming in at different angles to use a little, you know, conspiracy theory chat. But like,
And like you said, his hands aren't holding onto anything. And if you look near his knee, like his upper thighs that are in the water, it doesn't look very convincing. But no, it was faked, but it was made because I think a newspaper was running an article about the three 1912 presidential candidates, which were Taft, Woodrow Wilson, and Teddy Roosevelt. And they old school photoshopped each of the candidates onto the back of their party's mascot. So Taft was on an elephant, Wilson was on a donkey, and people, you know, Americans are really bad with our own history. A lot of people don't know.
I mean, I didn't even know he was the 26th president, and I used to work at a history museum, so.
Yeah, there you go. And so Teddy Roosevelt wanted to run for president again. He basically picked Taft as his successor when Roosevelt was president, but then he didn't like how Taft was presidenting, and so he ran again, but didn't get the Republican nomination, so he started his own party. And when they were like, Teddy, do you feel like you could do this? Teddy was like, I feel as fit as a bull moose. And that became
the bull
Teddy
moose
Roosevelt's party.
Party.
Exactly.
I remember
so
that.
They photoshopped him onto a bull moose. And that's why he
and
didn't
by photoshopped. You don't necessarily mean photoshopped. We didn't really have a term for that in 1912.
No, they were.
I'm sure
they were probably
composited.
In a Photoshop. You know,
literally.
Like old school and like put it together. Yeah. No, but he didn't win. Wilson won. So Roosevelt did not serve non-consecutive terms, unlike the only other guy to do that, Grover Cleveland.
Right.
Who was the 22nd and 24th president. So there's a fun trivia thing. Where it's like currently there have been 46 presidents and 45 men have been president. So fun thing for you.
Fun fact.
Okay. And that's, you know, so far it could happen that somebody gets reelected again after serving non-consecutive terms. Okay.
Let's hope
it. But still no real historical precedent for any of these options. So we'll call it a tie there legally. Okay. What does the law say about
tickling?
Moose riding, buffalo petting, bear tickling. And it turns out they're all illegal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You're
depending
not allowed
on
to
where
no touching.
No touching. No touching. Like in 2015, a couple of Canadians up in British Columbia found a moose swimming in a lake, and they thought they'd pull a Teddy Roosevelt and like ride it. And they jumped on it and they thought it was hilarious. And the video went viral. And the Canadian police were like, hey, why don't you come about our hoose and we'll talk to you real quick, eh?
Yeah, eh?
And they got fined $2,000 Canadian each.
Wow.
And had to make a $2,000 Canadian fine to a wildlife protection conservation trust.
That's $1,500 US.
Okay, good to know. So it is real money, Canadian dollars.
That's quite
even
a
though
lot.
It's colorful and smells like maple syrup if you scratch
it. I do love it.
That is true, by the way.
It has hockey on the number five, or it used to.
It does.
It may have changed the five since then.
It does. It did at one point. And a poem on number 10. Anyway, that's besides the point. I actually really love Canadian money.
So whimsical.
It's beautiful. Okay. So same thing happens from time to time with bison in America's national parks. Is people will like try and pet them, and you can get fined like $500. You're supposed to say 25 yards, which is basically 25 meters, or 100 yards from, you're supposed to stay about 25 yards from bison and about 100 yards from bears or wolves. And if you get closer or you touch them, you can get fined. And that's assuming that, you know, the bison doesn't just hulk out and run you over.
Yeah.
The National Park Service actually made a fun little guide, a visual guide of how to pet bison, which I've shared with you.
Oh, God. Is it... I'm clicking.
Yeah, it's got all the parts of the bison labeled. And what do they say?
It says, okay, so it's the bison, and it says, no, near the chest. And then by the feet, it says, why? on the head, it says, huh, you really do get the horns. And then on the top, it says, think of the children. And then on the back, in the haunches, it says, free flying lesson. And by the butt, it says, nope. And then near the back legs, it says, concussion.
Concussion.
So that's excellent. That's
the
excellent.
National Park Service would really like you to not pet the bison, please.
Yes.
Don't do
no
that.
No doing that, please.
And, you know, it can be like, ah, ha, ha, if nobody gets hurt. But there was a Hawaiian man who recently, he thought a young bison was in trouble near a stream, and he pulled it out. And then the herd rejected the baby bison because of, like, the smell and from the human. And they euthanized the bison, and he was fined $500. So, again, illegal, don't do it. And grizzly bears, like I said, there are fines for getting too close, for approaching, for feeding grizzly bears, depending on where you are. They're different. So, again, a wash there, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So we had to go scientific. We had to go biological.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, okay, on a tree of life, right, mapped out, where do these things fall? And I actually found the coolest freaking tool that is a total, like, day waster. If you have time on your hands and you just want to visualize all of life, there's a website called onezoom.org, and it is awesome. It is like a map, a fractal map that these programmers made. So, you know, a fractal is, as you zoom in on a pattern, the pattern repeats itself infinitely.
Right.
So they used this fractal, you know, so they could save on computing power. So you could actually just keep zooming in and zooming in until you got to, like, individual animals. And they made it so you can actually search, like, how closely related things are and trace back the history.
Wow, cool.
It's awesome. I'm always
That's
looking
really
for, like, neat tools like this, or just, like, whenever you see these trees, right, they're called phylogenetic trees. It's like, how did they make them? Who made it? Where did it come from, you know?
Yeah.
And I found this tool that makes it super simple. So phylogenetic trees are those branching things you'll always see when it's like, oh, you know, orangutans are our closest relative. And if you want to know a little bit more about that, these trees are basically, you know, our best hypothesis on how evolution basically went down over time and where they split. And they use a combination of things. There's the actual genetics, you know, the DNA. They'll look at different genes of animals and see, like, okay, based on how many mutations are in these genes and how long it takes mutations to happen, typically, we think if they must have split this far back, or they'll assign common traits, you know, and they'll group organisms by that. They'll be like, okay, well, you know, everything with a backbone, a vertebrate, right? Like, must have a common ancestor that had a backbone going back at some point. And that must have been so many, you know, millions and millions and millions of years ago. And then, you know, it'll split off again and be like, okay, well, we've got fish with backbones, but then some of them develop jaws. So everything that's got a jaw splits off in this direction and branches from the common ancestor with the jaw. So that's how they construct these phylogenetic trees. And it gets complicated because you can have convergent evolution where animals that split off seem to come back and gain some traits again, right?
Everything becomes crabs.
Yeah, everything becomes crabs. The perfect body, the ideal peak performance. That's what it looks like. You may not like it, but it's a crab.
It's evolved several times and will continue to evolve.
Yep, everything comes back to crab. But, like, mammals, right? We all evolved by something that came out of the water and was walking around on land at some point. And then mammals that are in water again, like whales or dolphins, they regain some of these aquatic traits like flippers, fins, that sort of thing. So like fish have, you know, or penguins, right? Their wings became basically flippers. So that's an example of convergent evolution, right? It came back. So
yeah,
that can kind of muddle building a phylogenetic tree. It can get a little complicated. So, you know, these are our best guesses and they're subject to change. But still, the onezoom.org tree is so awesome. Yeah. And I used it to actually trace common ancestry. No, you, not you.
Oh, you found me on there?
I did not. Can you imagine if I just typed in trace and it zoomed in? What and if it was like, on a completely different branch, like stemming off from Archaea? Wait, what? How?
I am several million Archaea in a suit. In a trench coat. Currently in a Christmas sweater.
It's a communal organism of Archaea. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so when you actually plug into the OneZoom site and trace these specific animals, you can see where they branch off. So moose and bison, they share a common ancestor that dates back to 22.2 million years ago. So around that time, you know, they split off and some, you know, offspring of that ancestor went in the moose direction and some went in the bison direction.
Okay. And I like where this is going.
The way, I mentioned bison and buffalo, very closely related. And it's true, like their most recent common ancestor is just 15.4 million years ago.
That's nothing. Evolutionarily, that's so close.
Blink of an eye, right? So when you zoom in on this tree, you're really getting towards like the last little tendril of these branches of this very, very winding fractal. And that's where you see the buffalo and bison split off. Whereas you have to go a little farther back, like another branch back to get to moose and bison or moose and buffalo, right?
Yeah. Interesting.
So for perspective, humans and chimpanzees, right, we're always told we're pretty close. That's about 6 million years ago, we shared a common ancestor.
Okay, so 15 is a little further away, but not that much further.
Not particularly far, no. Now, by comparison, if you wanted to trace how close moose. I think plural of moose is moose. Moose and bears, that goes back 72 million years ago is when they last shared a common ancestor.
Oh, wow, that is much further.
Yeah, they're much more distantly related, right?
Yeah.
Another fun thing about this, because they list the scientific names of things, grizzly bears, a.k.a. brown bears, their scientific name is Ursus arctos. So
cool.
not polar bears, which you think might be arctos. Those are Ursus maritimus. No, Ursus arctos, because arctos is the Greek word for bear.
And so it's bear.
Ursus is the Latin word for bear. So grizzly bears are bears.
I think it's funny if there was like a Star Trek Universal Translator that just translated all of our words into whatever you're listening to, even if you're speaking different languages, like Nile River would just be river.
Sahara Desert. Gobi Desert, Mojave Desert,
desert.
There'd be a lot of time
that you'd really have to like, that's where the universal translator in fiction works. And in real life, it would just be like, everybody's saying the same word twice, like a lot.
Yeah.
ATM machine. I don't understand. Why are they
doing
that?
Have you noticed how bad we are at naming things as humans? But eventually it just becomes like the name for something.
Yeah.
So it's like, then it's like, oh, it takes on like this new meaning. But when the people first got there, they're like, huh, desert. Okay.
We're just going to call it desert. This is the desert part.
We're in the desert.
And then they meet somebody who doesn't speak their language and they're like, Sahara. And everybody's like, oh, that must be what they call the desert. Sahara Desert. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Beautiful. Proper noun for it. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
If you're going from a phylogenetic perspective, riding a moose is much more similar to petting a buffalo or bison, because they're more closely related, than tickling a bear. But then I had a brainwave.
Ooh.
And I realized we're making an assumption here, right?
Okay.
Because I know you can ride a moose, right? Like, it's physically, like, that just depends on you doing something, right? And then the moose is, it just has to be there. Same for petting a bison, right? You have to put your hand on the bison. Don't. Do not.
No.
But then the bison is pet, right?
Right.
But to tickle a bear requires you to do something and the bear has to react to it.
It's not like petting the bison, and the bison does like what my cat does, or like rubs its little head on you. It's not like that.
Yeah, exactly. Here's an important question that I think we left unexamined when we started diving into this, and that is, are bears ticklish?
Julian!
I know!
Are they?
Okay, well...
Are they?
Now we have to talk about tickling and the science thereof.
Oh my god!
Okay, so...
I need to know.
In 1897, a couple of psychologists, G. Stanley Hall and Arthur Allen, tried to define tickling and categorize tickling, and they came up with two categories of tickling.
Disappointing. I've come up with a whole list of categories, and then you like move one card and it's like this one, and then you move a second card and you're like
two items,
that's it.
Two things, job done, put me in the history books.
I'm sorry, no, please continue.
No, trust me, when you hear the names it's gonna make up for it, because the names are doing a lot of work.
Okay.
So the first kind of tickling is like that, if like a feather is lightly touching your skin and you feel that kind of irritation and the need to brush it off, right?
Yeah.
That's
when your
that's
hair,
the first
like,
type.
Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah,
now
you know,
I feel like
just like
something in my face.
Something is brushing against you and you feel the compulsion to like get away from it, like swat it away or move away or whatever, right?
Right.
That's the first kind. And that's called nismesis.
What?
This is my Holiday Inn, by the way. I was thinking maybe, ooh, Moose, Canada, the North Pole, blah, blah, blah. But no. Merry Nismesis to all who celebrate.
Merry being tickled very gently in a somewhat annoying way.
Merry Nismesis.
Nismesis.
Okay. So that's the first type. And a lot of animals exhibit this. And the thinking is, you know, if there's some creepy crawly, a pest, fly, spider, whatever, that's on you, it's a useful instinct to just have to want to get away from it, right? But I think Brendan is really asking about the like laugh out loud, like can't stop giggling, tickle fight with your siblings kind of tickling.
Like and a Disney bear that's being like tickled in a cartoon.
Oh, yeah, like Baloo. Oh my gosh, they do that, don't they?
Yeah. They like wrestle and stuff, I'm pretty sure.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that type of tickling, that category, according to these two psychologists from the late 1800s, which is when psychology was really just the Wild West. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Is gargalesis.
What? So it's nismesis and gargalesis.
Nismesis and gargalesis.
Honestly, good band name.
So many good band names. We're going to have to make t-shirts one day. Merry gargalesis to all who celebrate.
Merry gargalesis. Honestly, I love gargalesis.
It's really great. Okay, it tickles me. So, there's a lot of kind of confusion as to why, like debate as to why gargalesis exists, right? Is it like a social bonding thing?
Right.
Possibly. Is it an instinct to protect the vitals, you know, like your tummy and your under your arms, right?
Oh, yeah, no.
Possibly.
Right.
We don't really know. Those two guys, though, the original researchers, Hall and Allen, they studied this by tickling 700 children.
Did someone look into them? Like, are they... Are they okay?
We're doing science. I think that the paper, they had people write in. They were like, tickle your child and then like tell us the responses.
Tell us what's going on.
We'll give you a prescribed way to tickle them. And then you write in and tell us what it was and we'll categorize it.
So they
weren't like doing hands-on research, thank goodness.
Yeah,
but,
thank goodness. How would you even double blind that, you know?
Yeah. And there are a few other animals that exhibit it. We see it in apes, great apes. We see it in rats, surprisingly.
Yeah, we mentioned that in an earlier episode of the show, I believe.
Right.
About about the laughter and if animals tell jokes, I think.
Exactly.
If I can recall that.
Exactly. Yeah, rats will like emit sounds like higher than the range of human hearing, but they'll also, you know, given the option to run through a maze and pull a little lever that they'll be quote unquote rewarded with tickles, they'll choose that, right? And they interpret want to be tickled, you know. Also, great gig for those rats compared to some of the other poor rats. Like, I would like to be the tickled rat if I had a choice compared to a lot of other options.
Not the ones that are genetically given cancer or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Downer. That's the
real bummer. No, tickle rat, please. But bears do not seem to be ticklish in this way.
What?
Now, admittedly, research is limited. You know, there's a few
more
videos.
Research is needed.
Yes, there's a few, well, is it really necessary?
Oh, yes, it is.
Yes. Okay. There's a few videos of people who like work at, you know, bear sanctuaries where there's young cubs, and they'll say like, you can't really tickle them. You know, you can like move your fingers on their feet or whatever, but they don't react in that same way that you might call, you know, really being tickled. Like they are ticklish. So based on that and the phylogenetic tree having clear links to the most similar, I would say definitively, Brendan, that riding a moose is more like petting a buffalo than it is like tickling a grizzly bear. Untie him, let him out of the volcano. He is free.
Wow. And also, don't do any of those things.
It's a kinesmesis miracle.
Wow. Wow. Are you
A
ticklish?
Plus absurdity. Me? I was pretty tickled by this question, I gotta say.
I mean, are you ticklish? When was the last time you were tickled?
Don't touch me. Do not.
I'm going to tickle you next time I see you. I'm going to see what happens.
You're going to do it, and I know you are, and I'm going to be upset. But I'll be laughing, and it'll seem like I'm having fun, but I'm not.
So you are ticklish, but hate it.
It always goes too far, right? At first, stop, stop, stop!
Oh, God.
I said stop! It's where it always ends up.
You need someone who will tickle you, but also respect your boundaries.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, and definitely don't crack my nuts.
Oh, right, nutcracker. I almost forgot that was even a thing. It's been
because I enjoy the sensation of nut cracking. So
yeah, with the levers, the lever.
Yeah, with
ones.
The little lever, or maybe even get to use the little one.
Fun
you know,
fact:
this holiday season,
the nutcracker levers is how we got to the claw cracker as well. For when you eat crabs, the end result of all evolution. So it really all comes together.
All comes together, but what a wonderful holiday episode! I think we really captured the spirit of the season with this one.
All right, well, thank you all for listening to That's Absurd. Please elaborate. Thank you for listening, either you know alone or with your friends and family. Please make sure and tell your friends and family about this show and rate us if you haven't on whatever podcast app you listen on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts or wherever. Just shoot us a rating. If you have a question, make sure you go down into the description here on the podcast in the show notes. You can click on a link there and send us a question that you might have, or you can go to our website, thatsabsurdshow.com/ask. We also have all of our old episodes and art that accompanies each of those episodes, related to often those episodes as well. So the art we talked about here in this episode, the picture of Teddy Roosevelt on a bear and all of that, we will put on our Instagram, which you can find on Instagram at That's Absurd Show, or we're also on Threads, and we have a Facebook page, but we're not super active there. So if you want us to be active there, please tell us, because we're not really sure how much of our social media we should be focusing on. Julian, where can people find you? Why don't you do that?
I exist on Twitter and Threads at Hug It Out, HUGGETOUT. If you look me up on Facebook, you might get the guy in Chile, so don't add me there.
Or do. Maybe, you know, that guy can get a benefit. He seems cool.
Can you imagine he's getting all these questions in his inbox of, like, absurd guys? He's like, why are they asking me this all of a sudden?
But in Spanish, so he's just like, ¿Qué pregunta?
¿Por qué? Yeah,
anyway. And you can find me as well. Just look for @TraceDominguez everywhere. You can find me here, of course, every other week. So we'll see you in 2 weeks. Have a lovely end of your year. Catch you in 2024. Bye.
Bye. I got to get ready for the 17th night of Nismesis.